podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the 4000 Holes podcast, brought to you by The Terrace, with me, Roger Whiteside, and my guests this evening, Matthew Grimshaw, Lindsay Lewis, and Ian Herbert. Great to have you all along with me, Matthew, Lindsay, and Ian.
Good evening, Roger. Pleasure to be on the other side of it, as it were.
Lovely to be here. Never get my full name referenced, so thank you. That's quite exciting.
It's been a while since I was referred to as Matt. As Matthew, sorry, not Matt. Yeah, I got it wrong myself.
We're off to a good start. What I want to try and get this is a podcast that can be half an hour in length, split into three sections, of which today we're going to be talking about our FA Cup exploits from last evening, a look at some transfers that have and haven't happened over the last 24, 48 hours. And with it being Groundhog Day on the 2nd of February, I thought we'd have a quick discussion about how it feels as though we're in a little bit of a purgatory period as Rovers fans at the moment, banging heads against the wall, making similar mistakes. The Lewis O'Brien deal, is it on, is it off? The strikers are coming, defenders are coming. There's plenty to unpack in that section. So if we could come up with a sort of half an hour podcast for you, which is ideal for you on your commutes to work or walking the dog or wherever you get your podcasts, however you listen to them, hopefully you can enjoy a bit of time with us here on the 4000 Holes podcast. So first of all, before we get into anything, if you weren't aware, we played in the FA Cup fourth round in a replay last evening. Unfortunately, myself and none of the guests here made it down to St Andrews, where Blackburn Rovers prevailed in extra time, beating Birmingham City by 1-0, thanks to an Austin Trusty own goal. Now, what that does do is set up an intriguing tie away at Leicester City in round five. But in regards to Birmingham, I'm sure the panel and I were joined by being at Ewood Park on Saturday and the frustrations around that. Matt, coming to you first, you were at Ewood on Saturday. I know you were as frustrated or saw on social media you were as frustrated as I was. What was your thoughts on the win last night? What was your thoughts on the game on Saturday? Is it good that Rovers are progressing? Is a win, sort of similar problems coming to the fore once again?
Yeah, I mean, it's always good to get going in the Cup. We did well in the Carabao Cup, I thought. You know, it's always good to have a couple of good Cup performances. It gives chances to Pairs, who, you know, seems to have an amazing game last night. And that's what the Cup's all about, I think. It's about getting game time for those who don't get it and giving the chances to them. Equally, I also think it's a good chance to rest players. I think there's players that are playing, you know, week in, week out, like maybe Tyler Morton, for example, who played on Saturday and was at fault for Birmingham's first goal. He was rested yesterday, and I think we seem to reap the rewards from that. You know, Travis getting back in, he seemed to do all right last night. I've not seen anywhere that he was awful. So, yeah, I think it's good. I think it's good for a Cup run, and I'm looking forward to Leicester. It's another ground to tick off more than anything.
Lindsay, you were at the game on Saturday, were you? I know you couldn't make it last night.
Yeah, I was there on Saturday. It's boring. I'm boring myself with the same conversations, the same issues. But the important thing is we got through last night. And I love the Cup run. And actually, the Cup runs have been the highlight that will live with me forever. And we had a great day out at Norwich in the previous round. So, yeah, delighted to be through. Leicester's a really close game for me. I've already booked the time off work today to be on a day session before. I mean, who has an FA Cup game at 7:45 on a Wednesday night? I take that as a personal insult. But I think actually in a world of chaos, and it does feel quite chaotic at Rovers at the moment, the Cup runs have been quite joyous and a nice distraction from some of the league issues. So long may it continue.
I think what you touched on there, Matt, and also Linz, with the refreshingness of the Cup runs of, like I said, particularly the West Ham game. And last night, I'm in the boat of a win's a win, no matter what happens. And I'm much happier when we win. If it's 1-0, if it's an own goal, it's scruffy. I'll take that every way. And I think winning is a confidence thing. You need to start winning in cups, leagues, whatever that carries on as form. But I mean, also, what point do you think someone like an Ainsley Pairs, man of the match last night, we mentioned Tyler Morton, who I think all Rovers fans can agree that perhaps a little rest from the team or just taking him out of the limelight for a game or two won't be a bad thing. Is there a chance for any of these players to push for a start against Wigan? I mean, would you be tempted to start Pairs after a man of the match performance? I mean, Kaminsky's been a bit up and down recently. He was at fault for a couple of the goals at Rotherham and definitely the goal last on Saturday, the first one from Kadra. Ian, would you put Pairs in on Monday, or do you think that's being a bit too reactive?
I think the interesting thing is our opponents on Monday are Wigan. And those of us with memories that stretch back to the FA Cup, was it last season? Was it barely last season? And saw his disastrous display. Season, yeah. So this is a chance for redemption. He's certainly played very well. The biggest issue for me about Ainsley Pears last night was Rovers' social media spelling his name wrong in the team announcement, which I thought was you know, it really cries out attention to detail, doesn't it, when they don't spell his name correctly. So, yeah, I think that's really the burning issue here. Goalkeeping is an unusual position. Obviously, there's only one spot in the team. So if you're going to drop someone, it can have serious repercussions. You've got to trust the manager whichever way he goes. He sees them in training every day. He will know their personalities. He will know whether that will destroy Kaminsky's confidence or it will enhance it. I think we all know that TK hasn't been in the best of form, but we all know that class is permanent and form is temporary. I think if it were me, I think I'd pick Kaminsky, but I think I'd be putting an arm around Ainsley Pears' shoulder and going, yeah, you're doing a cracking job, son, and you know, hang on in there.
Personally, I would put it in that topic that you wouldn't, I'm sure, a month ago, 6 weeks ago, have been talking about a Rovers team potentially with Ainsley Pears and Joe Rankin-Costello, who his renaissance at right-back seems to be something that we're all enjoying at the moment. But looking also at the game last night, it was interesting that sort of Dak seemed to have another good game from the reports. Or Tyrese Dolan again, who sort of seems to come in and go out. He sort of frustrates Dolan. Do you think he's someone who you would... you'd be looking to play against Wigan, Linz?
I don't get Dolan, which I know is a controversial point. And I can hear Twitter getting very upset with me as I speak. Lovely young man. You know, if he was my son, I'd be beyond proud of him. To be clear, it's nothing personal. It's one step over too many for me. And the lack of end product is incredibly frustrating. And yes, he's quick, but that's no good if you're doing eight step overs and losing the ball. So for me, he isn't the answer to the question. I think there's potential there, but I find it interesting that other people have been frozen out to go away and work on some of their issues. But Dolan always seems to at least make the bench. And for me, I would be an arm around the shoulder saying, you've got potential here, kid, but you're doing as much as you can be.
I think that's a fascinating... challenge to the orthodoxy, shall we say, because I think I wish I had the stats to hand, but some I recall seeing on social media a while back that he's got an amazing number of assists. Am I making that up? Does anybody else endorse
yeah,
that?
He was definitely one of our top assisters on what seemed like limited minutes prior to the World Cup. I don't know if he's still now. I think it was him and Hedges that were sort of neck and neck with each other, but
yeah, maybe that's
yeah he
same
does
tweet.
Seem to get a lot of assists.
And I've got to say that stat would surprise me, because I think if you said to me about Hedges' end product, I would say there is one. If you said to me about Dolan's, I would say he frustrates me. That is a criticism of it. I think he can do better.
It's interesting.
He's one that
I
believe can do better.
I'm still waiting for that explosion, probably a bit like you, Linz. It's sort of, he shows it in glimpses, and he has a good run of two or three games. And I know he picked up that injury just before Christmas. It has to happen for him at some point, I think, at Rovers. Otherwise, his career is going to start going downhill. He's not old by any means, but he's obviously getting to that age now where he needs to be. He should be playing every game. He should be one of the first names on the team sheet. It's interesting. On Saturday, I thought he really added to the game when he came on at halftime. Really added that urgency that was missing in the first half, and perhaps that's one thing we've missed with Sam Smodics being out injured. Although Smodics isn't technically gifted in terms of like some of the other players are, but that work rate and that sort of pressing from the front, I think, is a key thing for Thomason's teams. Just to turn it on, because I don't want to dwell too long on that, because obviously people will be able to read up about the game, and I'm sure find some highlights somewhere on the dark web out there where there will be some highlights. Looking ahead to Leicester, I know we've just mentioned it briefly, a trip to the King Power round 5, maybe a television game, who knows? I know Leicester have been on television the last couple of rounds against Gillingham and also Walsall. Matt, you've been to the King Power? You've been to Walker Stadium as well?
It'd be a new one for me, and it's one I am looking forward to. A couple of my friends have been. I've got a friend at university who's a Leicester fan. It seems like a nice ground. I've always wanted to go, but we never seem to be playing them really. But I also think it's a good chance to go through as well. You know, they're struggling. They'll probably chuck some of their new players in for the game. Maybe that won't be getting the minutes leading up to the game. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. The new ground and the possibility of going through as well.
Linz, you've been to Leicester before. I know you said you booked the time off work. You said new ground, was it?
No, I've been to the old one and the new one, showing my age. It's a great ground, and it's the ground when you speak to Rovers fans at away days and you say, like, who do you want in the next round? Everyone always says Leicester. So my phone lit up last night with people going, we finally got them, we finally got them. So I think even it being a Wednesday night fixture, I expect it to be busy, because we don't get that many new grounds. It's exciting. It's Premier League opposition, but I'm with Matt. I think it's a winnable fixture. I really do. I don't think they've got anything to be frightened of. And I think this is where they're so frustrating, because if they apply themselves like they did at West Ham, for example, they've got nothing to fear of anyone. Or if the team that turns up that plays Burnley and Preston turns up, we get absolutely battered, and who knows? And that's, you know, it's Rovers roulette, isn't it? You turn up and hope for the best.
And Ian, just finally on Leicester, some famous Rovers games against Leicester down the years. I know a FA Cup quarter final at Ewood, a playoff final.
My favourite recollection of Leicester is a trip to Filbert Street, and on my way out of the ground, I think we drew. We pulled up at the traffic lights and this smoky Mercedes pulled up alongside us, driven by one Kenneth Matheson Dalgleish. So we waved and he kind of like looked straight ahead and pretended not to have seen us hanging out the windows. Kenny! Kenny!
Did we win that game?
I think it was a draw. I recollect a draw, so I'd have to go back and look at the results. I can't remember if it was the first season back up or the second season. But seeing Kenny there was good. I've been to Filbert Street on a few occasions, but I've not been to Walkers. So there is the enticing prospect. I need to look at my work calendar because, of course, these days the FA Cup is midweek and there's now and stuff like that. So the traditions are going out the window, but it's not inconceivable that we could be making the journey, but just needs a bit of preparation, I think.
Yeah, just did a little research before coming on air. Probably Tuesday the 28th, Wednesday the 1st of March, sorry, 28th of February, that is, Wednesday the 1st of March or Thursday the 2nd of March, most likely dates for your diary on that one. Talking about things going into the FA leads us on to section two of today's podcast, which is on about transfers, incomings and outgoings. Now, we're recording this on Wednesday evening, the day before we're hoping to send it out. And the Lewis O'Brien story is fluid, to say the very least. By the time you listen to this, it could be in the next 10 minutes. It could be off. It could be on. We don't know. What we have been told and what our sources have told us is that there is some paperwork issues behind the scenes. Ian, you can fill us in a little bit more on that.
I can, yes. Yeah. The forum has been red hot. Go to the brfcs.com forum, everybody, for the latest update. But essentially, what's thrown the cat amongst the pigeons is a post from Alan Nixon on his Patreon feed. So he has basically outlined that not all of the paperwork has been submitted in time or in the requisite format. There is an issue with something, which means that Rovers are basically going to have to make an appeal to the EFL. But everybody else, of course, involved in the promotion race will be keeping a very close eye on that. And if Rovers were to get dispensation to register O'Brien, then doubtless they'll be up in arms and not at all happy about that. The biggest, the person I feel most sorry for in this is O'Brien, who, of course, has now been excluded from Nottingham Forest registered Premier League squad. And that means that he's potentially got from now until August where he can't play football, which seems absolutely and utterly extraordinary. It's classic Rovers, many would say. This new regime has come in and we expected better, I think it's fair to say. And this is not the best of starts.
We'll get onto that just in section three as part of our Groundhog Day. But you've sort of teased what is to come. But before then, Matt, can you tell us and the listeners out there what sort of player Lewis O'Brien is? Would you be excited if he joins the club?
Yeah, like many Rovers fans, call us sad if you want, but I stayed up quite late hoping for the announcement, watching his highlight reels on YouTube, you know, sort of just praying to my TV screen that we did just announce him. He seems to have everything. I know a few Huddersfield fans, so in the Championship, he's got everything. He can tackle. He gets assists. I've seen him score a few nice goals. I think he would fit in our team. And I think for me anyway, he's exactly what we needed to get in the window. So if we can get him, then perfect.
Are you familiar with Sorba Thomas too? For Huddersfield fans, we've been speaking about him because he's, of course, the name everyone seems to be forgetting about, having signed last week and then being cup tied. He looks exciting.
Yeah, I mean, last season's stats for him speak for themselves. This season, I'm not so sure what's going wrong. There was hints from my friends that maybe it's an attitude problem. And, you know, he thinks he played for Wales. He got a Wales call up and a lot of Huddersfield fans seem to think that's hindered him in a place in a way that you would have thought it would have done the opposite. So, you know, maybe there's an attitude problem there, and you have question marks as to why a team who's threatened with relegation would get rid of one of their supposed best players. But obviously that depends on the deal that we've struck with them, you know, the finances behind it maybe. But yeah, he's an exciting player who can create chances. And I do think we've missed that in recent months.
Lynn, are you familiar with either Messrs. O'Brien or Thomas?
Well, I'm based in Nottingham, so anyone that comes from Forest, I just always put the feelers out to my Forest supporting friends. So one of the messages I got back was, he's immense, our best midfielder by far in recent seasons. Really rate him. He would be an amazing signing for you. And I very much trust the person that sent me that message. So, you know, the deal concerns me a little bit. The potential that we've agreed to pay 10 million if we get promoted. Is he a Premier League player? But then are we really going to get promoted? So actually, is it worth the gamble for the next few months? And in terms of Thomas, I agree with Matt. I think it's exciting to have somebody creating chances. But again, I'm going to bore myself by saying who's going to get on the end of these chances. And that's all well and good having crosses come into the box. But, you know, have we got anyone that's going to be in the box? And maybe that's a conversation for part three as well.
I think that's the one thing looking at the transfers. There does seem to be a gaping hole in the striker section. Obviously, famously, Tony Mowbray saying back at Ewood in one of the fans' forums, was it 2016 or 2017-18? About defenders are coming. It feels like strikers should be coming as part of this transfer window. And obviously it looks like they just haven't come. So I too share a little bit of that pessimism, should we say. Just on a way with you, Lindsay, I know you've seen a bit more than others have of Dylan Markhande. Perhaps one of those names that you thought might have just stuck around till the end of the season. But interesting to see how he'll do at Aberdeen.
Oh, it's a little bit emotional, isn't it? Yeah, so I saw his debut at Hull. Was it Hull when he got injured? And then obviously I've seen him in the cup this season. He really wrecks my head because, like Ledley King saying, he's the best young footballer he's ever seen. You know, that's a direct quote. And then I watch this young man who is full of energy, but again, probably doesn't work hard enough for me. And it was interesting, especially Norwich in the cup when he did track back. That was when the game turned for me, and some, I think Trav had a word with him and kind of said you need to be tracking back, and the game changed. I think Aberdeen is an interesting move. If my dad is listening, I'm not slagging off the Scottish Premier League when I say this, but you know, is it the standard of football that we want one of our players to be going to? And is it Leighton Clarkson that's gone up there and kind of disappeared? You know, I suppose the view is they want him to have minutes, but is he the type of player that can take a crunching tackle from some big burly Scotsman after like 3 minutes on his first game? We wait and see. There's clearly potential there, but again, does he fit into the project? And I'm just not sure JDT fancies him, to be honest. And I think he's very clear, if he doesn't fancy you, you're either bench dropped or gone. And I quite like that about him.
Yeah, I feel he's always been playing catch up, really, hasn't he? Since that whole game when he tore his hamstring and was then out for the rest of the season, although he sort of flirted with coming back towards the end of the campaign last season. It's been a weird transfer window, I think, across the whole footballing landscape. Any other sort of EFL, Premier League things that sort of stand out in your mind, Ian, or anything that you look at another club in the Championship and think, oh yeah, you know, they've done really good work? I know Middlesbrough have signed a couple of exciting youngsters from Aston Villa, and like some Championship teams just do, or seems to do this time of year, it gets to February, they're on a roll, they look upwardly mobile, and you almost wonder who can stop them being in the playoffs now. Is there anybody else? Watford, West Brom, a few teams?
Yeah, I think the thing about Middlesbrough is that they do have an owner who's always been willing to back them. And I have to say, when they appointed Michael Carrick, I was a little bit sceptical, shall we say. but he seems to have galvanised folks up there, and he seems to be building a squad. So they are very definitely a threat. The team that I'm looking out for in the Championship, when we're always looking for role models at Rovers, it's Luton Town. Luton Town went above us in the league this week. How much have they spent? When are they on the front and back pages about buying players and all the rest of it? They're just quietly effective and efficient. So they are the new Brentford, shall we say, in the Championship, in terms of Rovers looking for someone and saying, this is how to do business. And you see that Amari Bell's there, and good luck to him. He seems to have slotted in quite nicely and be doing a terrific job for them. And we're still struggling to replace him, notwithstanding Harry Pickering's efforts. The one transfer window story, though, for me, isn't in the Championship. It's what on earth is going on at Stamford Bridge? Yeah, have they discovered oil, diamonds, or sort of gold underneath that ground? They have spent more in this window than all the clubs in France, Germany, Italy and Spain, was it? The stat quoted? All the clubs in the four major leagues. Absolutely insane stuff. I find myself compelled to watch them because it's just a car crash waiting to happen. That we could just get some of the crumbs from that table to boost our squad. But yesterday was a strange day. Was a really strange day. Very frustrating. But I think as Rovers fans, we've become used to it.
Just interestingly, I was thinking about Middlesbrough when we were talking about the various clubs. I thought they were fine. I thought it was a great game, the Rovers-Middlesbrough game, until John Buckley got sent off. But I still maintain the best side I've seen down at Ewood this season was Birmingham, I think, in the league match. I thought they were fantastic, and yet Rovers won 2-1. But just interesting looking at some of the clubs that we've spoke about. We've got a tough schedule coming up. Obviously Wigan next week, then Watford away will be tough, West Brom away, and of course we've got some of the big sides still to come to Ewood in Sheffield United, in our neighbours down the M65, in Norwich, and also Luton to come as the last home game. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what impact the January signings have on the Championship going forward. Of course, long way to go yet in the league table, and I was also looking today, 10 home games left for Rovers. It seems like we're into February and the sort of season's sort of coming towards a close, but anything but really. So, let's expect the unexpected. Section 3, which is the Groundhog Day part of it, which, of course, I'm sure anybody... Matt, tell me you've seen Groundhog Day. You're the junior member of the panel today. I see I had this feeling. He's shaking his head on the camera here. For anybody who doesn't know, Groundhog Day, a film starring... Bill Murray and Andy McDowell, about a weatherman played by Bill Murray who is stuck in a perpetual cycle of living the same day over and over and over and over again. It was last time I checked. Go stop what you're doing. Go and watch that. Come back to this podcast after that and listen to what we're going to talk about. Because, Linz, I know we spoke a bit off there before we came on. I want to come to you first. Are we being over the top at the moment as Rovers fans when we're saying it's difficult to be a Rovers fan? It's tiring to be a Rovers fan. Do we have this sort of sense of entitlement that perhaps we're a bit above a station because of the history that we've had? Or do we really as fans sort of justify the sort of negativity around the club, around the message boards, around social media at the moment that... We just seem to be making the same mistakes over and over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, I would say in life, I'm a generally positive person. And I think on social media, I'm probably known as a positive person. But I would say this season has probably been my hardest season in a long time. And I think actually, after the Preston game, BRFCS quote tweeted me and said something like, if you've lost Linz, you've really mucked it up. And I think that kind of sums up my feelings on the season, really. And actually, I don't have a sense of entitlement in terms of the history, in terms of the club, in terms of anything like that. I have a sense of entitlement as someone who dedicates my life to following this team up and down the country and spending a lot of money, a lot of time away from my family. And they give me amazing experiences. But when they give me awful experiences, I'm also entitled to say that as well. And I've had some great times this season, and I try to promote those and enjoy those. And anybody that, again, follows me on social media sees the love I have. But on those difficult days, it's perfectly okay to say we have been embarrassed here. We have being a joke here. You have asked me to pay a fortune to come and watch this. And it's okay to say it's the same things over and over again. And it's that for me. If in my job I was making continual mistakes, somebody would be saying, Linz, this can't keep going on. So I feel as someone that pays £40 and gets up at 6 a.m. to go to Burnley, I'm entitled to say that was awful. Someone who got snowed on and had to walk to Ewood because there wasn't a bus, a car, a tram or whatever to get there was entitled to say Preston embarrassed us. But I would say I get a lot more grief being negative than I do positive. And a lot of people say to me, you know, it's a project, we're second, we're third, we're fifth. But what I'm consuming is painful.
Matt, Linzy just touched on the project aspects of it, of course, before the season, the players, and JDT is talking about how it's a long-term vision and you shouldn't judge him on this season. And then he's also talking about let's not waste windows. And he's also mentioning about he doesn't have any input in who comes in. He's just a coach, but then he's also trying to take responsibility in other areas. Matt, in your opinion, is the project on track? We're into the fifth round of the FA Cup, a decent League Cup run. We're still in the playoff positions in the league. Youngsters in every position coming up through. I mean, Harry Leonard on the bench on Saturday once again. Jack Vale, Lewis Travis, Joe Rankin Costello, all academy graduates. Adam Wharton, Ashley Phillips. Are we a year or two away from a promotion side, or are we flattering to deceive? It seems the million-dollar question with any Rovers fan at the moment. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think every point that anyone will make probably has some sort of truth to it, I guess. Yes, we're seeing, you know, young players coming through, and as was just touched upon then, it's the same things that are going wrong. But the thing that I find hard to sort of cope with and sort of think about is the fact that it's the same things what are being said in reaction to someone saying everything's going wrong. You know, how many years in a row now have we gone to the top and then dropped off, and the reason is because we're a young squad? So, you know, if we're a young squad, you bring some experienced players in, surely that's what you'd think you'd do. We don't seem to do it. You know, it's just chuck a few more youngsters in the next year and we'll do the same thing again. So it is the same sort of cycle, but it's the same sort of things what are being thrown back at us from the other side of the argument as well for me.
Ian, your thoughts on that? Are we sort of preparing ourselves for the worst because we've been through it year on year?
That's my coping strategy, Roger. That is always my coping strategy. Prepare yourselves for the worst, then you can only ever be pleasantly surprised. And this season, I'm still waiting to be pleasantly surprised, I think. Anyone who went to Rotherham after 33 seconds thought, well, we know this one's going to end. You just knew with the evidence that we've seen, when we're bad, we are rotten. We are really, really rotten. And when we win, we rarely win with style and panache. I think I actually went down to Swansea to tick off a new ground, and that now looks like a real performance in isolation where the game plan was executed beautifully. So many of our other wins have been hanging on. We've seen us defending grimly, defending very well. But then, to me, the lack of character when we go a goal behind. I know that we have actually drawn some games and we did actually have the spectre of an equaliser last week. It just speaks volumes to me that it's kind of like the heads go down and there's no alternative strategy. So I think that's the frustrating thing. Considering we are in the league, it's been a miserable season. And that I can't square that, finding it really difficult to reconcile those two things. I don't feel enthusiastic. I don't feel energetic. I certainly don't feel entertained, Swansea away accepted. But yet, you know, you're sort of thinking, I am being overly critical. We are in the playoffs. I don't know how we're there. That said, I don't think we're going to stay there for much longer. So I think, you know, there is a dose of reality coming around. And given the lack of activity in the last window, there's very little to hang your hat on and say, well, this is how we could emerge from this. So really, really strange, really odd.
That's what I was going to come on to in terms of Linz, Matt. Do you think we can stay in the playoffs? Do you think, where do you see the season? I mean, let's face it, I don't think we're going to get dragged into anything in regards to a relegation battle, which I must admit, when I was at Celtic away pre-season and we'd lost Rothwell and we'd lost Lenehan and John Dal Thomason had been in the job for a week and a half, and I was chatting to some Rovers fans on the train on the way back, And I said to one of them, I said, I just hope we're not in a relegation battle all season. If you said to me now, 14th, 15th, comfortable, I'd have bitten his hand off. And obviously we've gone on and done different things on top of that. But Lynn's, Matt, if Lynn's come to you first, you think mid-table, do you think they can sneak the playoff? Is it sort of that sinking feeling already, and it's February the 1st?
I think, you know, the title of this part of the pod sums it up best. It's Groundhog Day. You know, I was at Bournemouth last season when we were second, probably one of the greatest away days I've ever had. We were so hopeful. We were so positive. It crumbled in January and February. We blamed that on Mowbray. We've all been sat waiting for that to happen at Sunderland. We're still waiting for that to happen. I think it's a false position. I was asked this question the other day and I said, if we can sneak sixth, it would be the greatest day of my life. I don't think we make the playoffs. And whilst I appreciate JDT is rebuilding, I think the theme of this episode is that there are long-term issues at Rovers that he as an individual can't fix, that even the new regime potentially can't fix. I think we as fans play a really important role in that, to keep asking for those standards to be raised, and to keep, you know, and maybe that does make us sound like we want more than we deserve, but actually our voice is important, and the club misses that a lot. It misses that in any, if I went into a shop and I bought a dress and it fell to bits, when I wore it once, I'd be taking it back. But continuously, I go and watch a team absolutely disintegrate and just continue to give them my money. Like, we are consumers, whether we like it or not, we are consumers, and what they are producing sometimes isn't good enough. But that's a wider conversation for another day. So no, to succinctly answer your question, if we seek sick, that would be a maze, but I suspect we'll be 10th and all very bitter as normal come May.
Matt?
Before the season started, I think we would have all been very content and happy with a mid-table finish. And I think we do need to sort of remind ourselves again that, as we've just spoke about, it's the beginning of hopefully something bigger. And there are hints that there is something that can become bigger. You know, we have got young, talented players. That's a fact. We've got good players. And they're tying down contracts now, which I suppose is something that maybe we didn't do in the past. But I think, yeah, I think playoffs in a month or two maybe we'll still be there, but ultimately I think we will drop out, but it all depends on how everybody's January signings go, really. You know, mid, which you see as a good thing, but I mean, it could cause upsets to the players that are doing well. They've brought in Cameron Archer, I believe. You know, Akpom's been brilliant recently. Is he not going to get a bit frustrating? And I do just wonder if we can maybe capitalise on the morale of teams like that, and teams like West Brom maybe dropping their heads a little bit because there's players that are a similar standard coming to the squad to maybe upset players that are already there.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting end to the season. Just a one-word answer from all of you in terms of Greg Broughton seems to be copping a bit of flack today for obviously the Lewis O'Brien contract stuff. We don't know the full story. I thought, let's do a podcast the day after the transfer deadline day. That'll be clear. Everything will be wrapped up. It'll all be nice and succinct. But no, we're here in a bit of limbo. I must admit, I've been very much a Greg Broughton fan when I've heard him on voice clips, audio clips, things on the website. I'm a little bit concerned, but sort of willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. In a word from all three of you, Greg Broughton, is he the problem? And also, actually, I'm going to give you another question. Is Yundale Thomason Rovers manager next season? Yes or no? Matt?
Yes, definitely.
Linz?
Yes.
Ian?
Yes.
You see, that's where I'm sort of a little bit on the fence, because I don't know whether this will change his mind. Will he get... He's obviously an ambitious manager, or he seems it. I don't think he's quite done well enough at the club just yet to move on to bigger and better things, which I'm sure is part of what he wants. If he wants to manage in the Premier League, he's got to do that. But it's going to be interesting to see how that relationship between Greg and Yundale changes over time, particularly if the O'Brien transfer doesn't come in. But that's it. That's enough for your podcast today. Just one special announcement before we go, though. We're joined, of course, tonight by the wonderful Lynz Lewis. Lynz, you've got another podcast to talk about, ones with our friends over at BBC.
I'm not cheating on you guys. You are my first love. But in the style of Rovers Ladies, I've signed a dual registration contract with the guys over at BBC Lancashire. So yes, Balls to It is our new podcast. It launched today. It's available on BBC Sounds, and you get to hear my dulcet tones along with five other amazing women chatting all things football. They're a lot better than me. There's lots of fans of different clubs across the county. So if people could go and have a listen, like it, share it, subscribe it, all criticism gratefully received, as long as it's not about me, obviously. And yeah, it would just be lovely if people went and had a listen. But I've been a bit MIA here, but I'm back. I'm one of the OGs, and Ian is letting me back on. So yeah, it's lovely to be back. And if people would like to have a listen to the new one, that would be great.
Men's football, women's football, international.
It's all football. So the idea is it's just football fans. So we happen to be all women, but we are just women that love the game. It won't be focused on. So we've got a Burnley fan, a Morecambe fan, two Rovers fans. So Jen Bellamy, who's also of this pod, and a Blackpool fan. So we'll talk about our teams, but we'll also talk about our lives, our love of the game. Obviously, I'm Scottish. We've got some England fans. We'll talk about women's football and anything else in between. So if anybody's got any topic suggestions, they can interact with us on Twitter and let us know. But it's been received really well so far. It's only been out for an hour and it's had 15,000 views. So I'm quite pleased with that. So yeah, if people could go and have a listen, that'd be lovely.
Excellent. We'll go and check that one out over on the BBC Sounds app. Well done, Linz. Thanks for joining me today for this 4,000 Hall podcast brought to you by The Terrace. Goodbye. Sports Social Podcast Network.